John, Jim, thank you. Let me add a few comments to put this discussion, before we throw it open to you, into some context. The presidential decision that voters make has historically been the most complex and difficult that any voter faces, and it's taken more seriously by voters than any other decision. You remember in the 1960s, books were written about how Madison Avenue was going to control the way in which Americans voted for president, that consultants and managers were going to be able to take candidates and mold them in the public eye into just what the public wanted, regardless of the reality. The fact of the matter is that's never happened. In the 70s, the candidate who spent the most time and money on public relations was Gerald R. Ford, who attempted to convince the public that he wasn't bumbling and that he was really a pretty smooth operator. It didn't work. Presidential decisions are important because of the importance of the office. In this country, voters look at different races in different ways. For example, voters who are voting for Congress at this point in our history are really, in many ways, voting for an ombudsman. The congressman is who you call up if Aunt Maud can't get her Social Security check. The congressman is who you call up if there are other problems with the federal government. The congressman represents an area too big by historic standards, but small enough so that a lot of people within the constituency know him or her and know his people, know the people in the congressional office and can relate to them. As a result, congressmen who are way out of step in an ideological sense with their constituencies are often elected, reelected, and reelected again because they're not being looked at for their vote or for a lot of these other things. Congressmen who we would consider lacking in character are often reelected for the same reason, because they're doing the job that the voters hired them to do in the first instance. Senate races in this country have become very, very different than that. Senators represent a big enough area that you don't call them when Aunt Maud can't get her Social Security check. You don't know the senator, and you don't know much about his office. You do know that a senator doesn't do much but vote, and it really doesn't matter whether he or she can run anything or whether he or she is a nice person. What you're interested in many cases, is how they vote, and as a result, Senate races in modern American history have become among the most ideological races that we have, because you know that the man or woman you vote for might be dumb as a fence post, might not be able to run anything, but if you can be sure that they'll reflect your views when they get into the Senate, that's enough. The presidential race is different than that. It has managerial aspects. It has a whole series of ideological and partisan and personal characteristics that voters have looked at very seriously before making up their mind. It's why nobody's been able to control that decision in the way that an advertisement can for a congressman. Television has made it even more difficult rather than easier for the consultants, the managers, and the candidates, because television in some weird way, either through interviews, through paid advertisements, through the debates, give voters an opportunity, as it were, to look the candidate in the eye and see what it is that they want out of that candidate. And what do they want? They want somebody who shares their values. They want somebody who they think will move the country in the direction that they'd like the country to be moved. They want somebody who they think they can trust not to lie to them. They want somebody who they think, and this is the complicated part, has the judgment and the ability to deal with some problem that they can't imagine that might affect their future and the future of the country and the future of their family's well-being that nobody's thought of at this point. So it's a very, very important and a very difficult decision that's made at the presidential level. Values are important, character's important, issues, positions are important. Party is important. Every presidential election in that sense is in part and perhaps primarily about the direction the candidate would take the nation and the character of the candidate who would take the nation there. Sometimes one thing dominates, sometimes another. In modern American history, the presidential race that was most concentrated on character was the 1976 race in which Jimmy Carter beat Gerald Ford. It was a race in which the Democratic candidate was able to say, I'll never lie to you. Who I am and what's in my heart is more important than what I believe, and you should vote for me for that reason. And really, for the first time in modern history, Americans did that because at that time they felt that's what they needed. Turned out he wasn't a very good president, but that's what they got. The good news for those who care about character, as I say, is that in part every election is about character, but not just about character. The second presidential election in modern times in which the character or the morality question was most important or more important than it usually is took place last Tuesday. And if you look at the exit polls and if you look at the distinctions that were drawn by the two candidates in the minds of the voters, not in the minds of the media, not in the minds of people that cynically look at these things, people like me, but in the minds of the voters, one of the candidates, in their view, represented the kind of character they were looking at. And that trumped a number of other things. A year ago, 6 months ago, if you asked who was going to win this year's presidential election, anyone with any sense of history would have told you that it would be a runaway for the Democratic Party. In fact, we've got a bunch of political scientists and economists in Washington who draw up formulas and keys to the presidency, and they tell you that all you got to do is plug this in and that in, and the result is you'll predict it right down to the percentage point. Every single one of them said there wasn't going to be a race, that this is a year in which the Democratic nominee was going to win easily. Why? Because the important thing in American politics, absent a war, is the economy. And we're in the midst of the longest economic boom that we've had in this century. A boom that under historic circumstances would be credited in large measure to the governing party, the party that holds the White House, and to the president, and to anyone of his party who got the presidential nomination in the next election. And yet character and moral questions count. Because from the very beginning, in spite of all of those formulae and all of those predictive mechanisms, it appeared that Al Gore, the nominee, couldn't get up to 50% and couldn't get above 50% when he should have been running far ahead of that. And no matter what was said about the Republican, even before there was a nominee, it was clear that the Democratic nominee was in trouble. And he was in trouble because of what we here characterize as the character issue. Because while Americans were willing to grant that the economy was doing well, things were going well, their lives were all right, there were problems, deeper problems that John was talking about. But they thought there was something wrong in Washington with the people that they have there. And so this race began to shape up early on as a sort of a pale imitation of the 1980 race between Ronald Reagan and his opponent. And in that race, as you'll recall, Mr. Carter, let me tell you why they were the same. In that race in 1980, for far deeper and more serious and more heartfelt reasons, the American people really wanted to fire Jimmy Carter. We were in trouble as a country. We were in trouble abroad. We were in trouble here. The economy was in the tank. The public wanted to fire him. But if you remember that race, Jimmy Carter had a significant lead right up through mid-October. The reason he had a lead was he said, look, maybe we have 21% interest rates. Maybe people laugh at us abroad. Maybe I'm not the best thing since sliced bread, but this guy that's running against me is a nut. And if you elect him, he's probably going to blow up the world and your grandchildren aren't going to survive. And it wasn't until mid-October of 1980 that the public sort of looked at each other and said, well, you know, this guy Reagan doesn't look like a nut. He's probably not going to blow up the world, and I think we ought to just fire Carter like we want to. And as a result, in one weekend, there was a huge shift in the polls. Reagan ran away with the race. Carter was gone. This year, in a milder sense, you had a public that was looking at the incumbent party and their nominee and saying, you know, we've really had enough of this. Sure, we're doing well. Sure, the economy is all right. We don't have 21% interest rates, but people still do laugh at us for different reasons. And we don't particularly like this guy. We don't like the guy that brought him into his administration. We don't like the way they've acted, mostly for moral reasons and character reasons, and we'd like to fire him. And the Democratic nominee said, well, that's fine. I might not be the most attractive guy in the world. I might lie once in a while, not about anything serious, and maybe you can't trust me, but at least I'm smart enough to run the government, and this other guy's a dummy. And do you want a dummy running the government? And so the challenge that Bush faced was to basically not prove he was a nuclear physicist like Jimmy Carter had in 1976, but to prove that he was smart enough to run the government. And as the race progressed, particularly through the debates, people thought, yeah, it looks like he could run the government. He might not win a Nobel Prize or anything, but that's really not what we're looking for. We can probably vote against this other fellow. And as a result, in a very close race for a whole lot of reasons, it looks like George Bush is going to be the next president of the United States, and that's against all historic precedent. And then if you look at the exit polls, and if you go into depth about why people made that choice to fire the incumbent party and its representative, it goes to moral and character questions. So the good news is people do care about it, and they do act on that. I'd like to make a couple of historical observations, or maybe historical observations. Jim talked about Richard Nixon. I was on a panel in Chicago Thursday morning on the election with Tom Donovan, who some of you may have known was Richard J. Daley's patronage chief. And Donovan made the point in his remarks that in 1960, we had a very close race for the presidency. And that on election night of 1960, all of Richard Nixon's advisors gathered around him and said it was very clear that by about 6,000 votes, I think, the Democratic Party had stolen the election in the city of Chicago. And there weren't very many people in the country who really doubted that that had happened. And to a man, they urged Richard Nixon to refuse to concede, to go to court, to get an investigation going, to try and get in there and get the information and take that presidency away from John F. Kennedy. Every liberal biography of Richard Nixon, written by people who despise the man, say that his greatest hour occurred in 1960 on election night, because Richard Nixon said to his advisors at that time, in a conversation related recently in an interview by Herb Klein, who was there, that the country and the system can't stand that kind of trauma. And it's more important to have certainty than to have Richard Nixon in the White House. And as a result, he told his advisors he would not challenge the results of that election because the country was more important than either he or his party. Now, Donovan had a reason for thinking that was Richard Nixon's greatest moment, of course, because he's probably the guy that stole Cook County for John Kennedy. Nonetheless, if we're talking about character, a man who is considered devoid of political character, in that instance, showed more of it on one night in 1960 than candidates who we think of as paragons of political character and morality have shown in the years since. And I find that very interesting. Thank you.